G'day and welcome to the Farms Advice podcast, where we talk everything agribusiness with episode 26 under my belt. On the show, we've got a familiar face with Alex Taylor joining us for a yarn to see how we dealt with the aftermath of Farmer Wants a Wife, working on his family farm and finding the one. He's remote but optimistic for what lies ahead on the grazing property with both the women and his love of the land in southern Queensland. He's built a following since airing on Farmer Wants a Wife and takes the time for the odd selfie here and there. A top bloke willing to have a crack at anything. Thanks for coming on. Another familiar face.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jack. I'm glad to be here.
It's good to see, like, into the show business of it all. How you panned out after the show?
Well, I don't know. Like, just sort of, I think just a lot more people sort of recognised me and just wanted a few selfies here and there. That was about it.
Down to your local races. I saw you there a few weeks ago.
Went down to Roma races the other day. That was good. That was a lot of fun. It's just good actually probably to be out and about, obviously, because with COVID and, you know, limitations on events, is sort of the first thing I'd been to where they had they were allowed to have 2,000 people the track, which was good. And I think everyone appreciated being able to go out, and especially being like a small rural, like, well, Roma's not too small, but small rural town, being able to go out and being social and just get that sense of community back.
Yeah, that's it. Being rural, you need a bit of a community building there for sure. So before we get down into it, Alex, let's just go into like what your background is and how are you connected to agriculture?
So I come off a 78,000 acre grazing property out in Cunnamulla, which is about 900 kilometres directly west of Brisbane, along the Queensland-New South Wales border. We run 4,000 merinos and then we got 400 head of cattle about. Yeah.
Is it still running those numbers at the moment with drought?
We are at the moment. Sort of by the skin of our teeth, we're still very dry. We've just bought 25 ton of cotton seed and then another probably $8,000 worth of hay. We've got the cattle on adjustment on the neighbor's place on like sort of lower mulga, and then we're just feeding all the sheep.
Yeah, right. So it's fine. It's still pretty hard up there. Like, it looks in the papers and the news that we're past drought, but you're still well within it.
Well and truly. Like, we got 8 inches at the start of the year, sort of like during the sort of summer rains period, and then it literally hasn't rained at home since June. We're hoping for a winter break, and then we're hoping for a spring break, and sadly it hasn't come. So now we're hoping for maybe a summer break. But no, still tough times ahead at home, and you know, there's little areas that have had reprieves, but as a whole, it's starting to get quite dry all the way across Queensland at the moment, and I think a lot of farmers starting to look to the skies and hoping for that big storm to roll in.
Well, hopefully they can get that La Nina coming through, get some moisture back in the ground, for sure.
That's it, exactly.
So are you running the property with your parents, or how's that work?
Yeah, so I'm running it with Dad. Like, dare I say, like, Dad's, you know, fairly in control, and, you know, I help, you know, I come there and assist and help him, like, do what we can, and but I know it's hard to sort of be progressive when you are dry and you're just trying to keep everything alive, you know, like this, that's all where your planning goes into, not so much sort of breeding and, you know, selecting a line of cattle or a line of sheep, you know. So yeah, that's sort of what we've been doing for the last 8 years is just trying to keep the core herd alive. Be it on adjustment, be it feeding, trying to breed where we can. Back in 2017, we didn't even actually join our ewes because it probably would have been too hard on them to have a lamb. So we gave it a miss. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're hitting bit in survival mode for the last few years.
We have been, mate. We have been. We've been in there very hard. When we got the rain at the start of the year, sort of gave us a few options. Like, you know, like the fat score got up on our sheep. We were able to bring all our cattle home off of Gisment. And we actually had our best lambing we have had in 9 years at home. We got 100% this year. We had 2,000 ewes and we scanned. And at the time of scamming, we had 54%. And so we took off all the dries and just crammed in the rams with all the dry girls. And yeah, we got 100%. So it was good, you know, like we were starting to like look at options. And then all of a sudden it just, someone turned the tap off. And yeah, it just hasn't rained since summer. So back into survival mode, back into feeding, which is a bit tough.
I can't imagine this is the same conversation you had with the girls on Farmer Wants a Wife, is it?
Nah, it's not. You know, you don't want to give them too much loom and gloom, you know. You want to try and be optimistic, you know. You got to sell them the dream and get them out there. Because, you know, that is why I went on the show, because it is hard to meet women out there, and, you know, women aren't moving out to the bush like they were because there isn't the opportunities there used to be.
Yeah, well, you're quite remote up there in Cunnamulla area, aren't you?
We are indeed. Like I said, probably our biggest centre is probably Toowoomba, and that's 700 kilometres away. So that's, you know, that's a day trip.
Yeah, just a drive down the road. What did the girls think of, like, their first impressions once they got out on the farm?
When they came out at the time of filming, it was quite dry then. They were shocked how dry it was, and also how vast it was. Like, I think they were expecting a cute little sort of grassy dairy farm as you see down in Victoria, and I think they came out and seen how vast and dry it was, and I don't know, they're a bit taken back how big it was. But they liked it. I think they just found it quite unusual. No one had ever sort of been that far west before, so it was a bit of an eye opener.
Yeah, it's something completely different though, isn't it? When your driveway is more than 10 k's long.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So it's probably about 40 kilometres from one end of the place to the other. And yeah, I think it's pretty hard for a city girl to fathom something that big.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with them. Like, if you're not within agriculture, you wouldn't have a clue of what's going on and you would be shocked.
Yeah.
But yeah, for those girls' first impressions, I bet they were pretty shocked too.
They were, like, definitely, you know, sort of knocked their socks off. But it was good reactions. You know, I think it was more like an awe. Like, I think, you know, I think they came out and they're like, oh, this is the real deal. Like, this is quite cool. Like, never experienced this in their lives. So it was good shock. I don't think it was a scary shock.
What did your parents think of the whole Farmer Wants a Wife?
I think it was a little bit tough for Dad. Mum and my sisters loved it, but it was a little bit tough for Dad. I think, you know, we had filming, and, you know, I'm meant to be there helping him, you know, do all the farm work and get all the things done. And I think, you know, filming takes up, you know, 24 hours of your time. And I think not being able to be there and help Dad do all the jobs that we need to get done was a bit tough. So he had to work without me a fair bit of the time, and you got cars coming in and out of the driveway and people everywhere. And I know when they're used to just dealing with two people for 90% of the year, I think it's a bit of a shock to the system. All these sort of artsy types out from Sydney and Melbourne, and you know, half the camera crew had never been on a farm before and been in that sort of heat. So yeah, it was a bit of a culture shock for old Dad, but he took it in his strides. You know, he enjoyed seeing sort of what goes into making a show, and I think he was just happy to see me with a couple of girls on the farm for once, which was nice.
Doesn't happen too often.
Nah, not too often at all. Nah, far and in between drinks, mate.
So what's on the plans for you at the moment? Like, with your platform now, Like, it's pretty cool that you can build such a platform after the show, being within agriculture. How do you see that working out? Or, like, do you plan on doing anything with it?
Well, I haven't, to be honest. Like, I don't know. Like, I just don't know. Sort of, you know, go on the show and you got, also, I think I almost got about 25,000 followers. And I don't know. Like, I just, I probably need some guidance. So I probably need to talk to someone, like someone that works with PR that could show me like how to utilize it and probably reach out to people more. Like, at the moment, like I try, like, you know, I put stuff up on as photos and stories just of, you know, just like when we're working in the shearing shed or, out on the motorbike and probably letting people connect a little bit more with agriculture, just seeing what we do out there, you know, that we are educated people. And like, these are some of the processes we go through. I know, just putting up a thing of like people like drafting, like, and, you know, people like, oh, that's, what are you doing? You know, what's this process for? And it's like, oh, well, we're taking off the lambs from their mothers so we can muck them, you know, to castrate them and then they don't get any incest with each other. I don't know, little stuff. I think just trying to make people aware, but as far as a platform, yeah, I haven't really thought about where I could take it. Might need to get some advice from you, Jack.
Yeah, maybe I can help you out after the show. It's cool. It's cool though to see like all the blokes on the show. The following is quite big there overall.
Yeah, it's it is like for Channel 7, like it was their biggest rural like viewing on a show for 6 years.
Yeah,
like
right.
Of regional Australia, like it was the most like regional viewing that they'd had on any like particular program.
For All the Farmers Wants a Wife previously.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it wasn't actually with Channel 7 previously. Channel 9 true. Used to own it and then Channel 7 bought it back and sort of revamped it, you know, gave it a another breath of life. I think they just thought it was a good show and deserved another sort of crack at the title.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's good to see you on there for sure. What's coming up next for you, Alex, like on the farm?
We've got shearing, actually. We've got shearing coming on next week. So
it's going to be a muster everything.
Oh, yeah, bro. I think... yeah, probably 40-degree day every single day. But we're going to get in and shear all our sheep, get the wool off them, sort of so they're a bit lighter, so they're not so hot. Also, as you know, like with wool, like you need to keep the fly out of them. And we are praying that maybe if La Nina comes and that we have a big wet summer, that the sheep aren't like full of wool, so then they don't get waterlogged.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to sort out shearing. And then after that, we've got some more investment, another place next to ours. So we'll probably be taking the cattle off, branding up, the rest of the calves and, moving them over to the neighbors.
Absolutely. As a young bloke, there's a lot of like blokes our age moving up through and like taking over the farms. Are you making many decisions or are you looking to take it over soon?
Well, I'd like to, and you know, ideally, you know, I'd like to say I'm helping making decisions on the farm, but not really. Dad's fairly still strong in control, and you know, I make suggestions and I've got ideas there, and I've got, you know, I've got things I want to do, but you know, it is still Dad's place and it's his farm and I need to respect that and, you know, let him, like, let me come in with my ideas and my plans sort of, like, in my time and in his time as well. Because, you know, I like merinos and I like wool, but I feel it's very labour-intensive. And, you know, it's getting harder and harder to find shearers. And I feel like maybe later down the track, like, looking into something like goats, or like Dorpers, you know, growing meat. It's just a little bit more labor intensive and bit easier to manage. And like I said, people are always going to need something to eat. You know, you cannot go wrong with meat. And I feel like that's the avenue that I eventually want to go down. But yeah, when I start bringing up these ideas with the old man, he gets a bit upset. So I'm going to take a step back.
Keeping traditional. Well, the protein like demand is there, isn't it?
Oh,
skyrocketing.
It's crazy, you know, and not that they're the most favorable partners at the moment, but, you know, China's middle class is growing. You know, and the middle class is growing, and they, you know, they want to eat better things. They want to eat beef. They want to eat lamb. And, you know, we're the food bowl of Southeast Asia. So, you know, a feral monopoly of the market.
Yeah, if we can improve our own standards, well, we've got quite high standards for our meat anyway for export. It's one of the best in the world.
Yeah, by a long shot, you know, like, you know, animal husbandry, like diseases, you know, like I think everyone knows, like if you're buying something from Australia, like it's quality, it's safe, you know, and that it's gone through a lot of processes to come to your plate. Whereas other countries, you know, might not have as high a standard.
Yeah, so they're diversifying your farm. You'd still keep some wool, or would you like to go full?
I think we've got such a good setup for wool at home. Like we've got a beautiful big wool shed and good yards, and it would be sad to get away from it. I don't know. And, you know, you say this now, but a couple of good seasons and like getting up numbers and, you know, could change it all. But I think eventually over time, I would rather just focus on one thing, which is like producing meat, you know, growing goats and growing dorpers and, I don't know. Like I said, it feels a lot less labor intensive, and then it's just one less thing you don't have to worry about. You know, you don't have to worry about getting shearers for your wool. You don't have to worry about the conflicting market with having to mules, having to lamb mark. You know, there's, you know, like more and more we're having to work with our animal activists. You know, which is fair enough, you know, like, I do feel a rapport for animals, and like you do want their quality of life to be better, and you don't want them to be in pain. But at the same time, it's going so far the other way, it's almost impossible for us to like run our business properly and for it to be affordable, like, you know, to give animals anesthetic, to have a qualified vet to do all the work. You know, all these things, all these factors to take in, whereas, and wool, you know, wool has a lot of hoops to jump through, you know, like people think it's cruel to shear, people think it's cruel to mules, people think it's cruel to landmark, and these are all necessities of, like, the wool market, and it's, you know, where's the point where it stops, where, like, us as the producer, like, where can we find a happy medium with our like animal rights you know representatives?
Have you hit much scrutiny online? Now you've got a bit of a profile, like being in ag, we can cover it a little bit. How have you dealt with that? Have you had it much?
You know what, I haven't really had any scrutiny really, probably over like farming practices that are done on the farm, but also I'm very conscious of not putting up anything that would, you know, alarm people or like put my industry at risk. Like I'll see, you know, I'm not putting up pictures of us like landmarking with like the lambs in the cradle. I'm not putting up, you know, videos of us branding calves or anything like that. Maybe afterwards with like a brand on them and an ear tag, but you know, nothing confrontational for people. And I think there's a time and a place. And if people don't understand the process, what you're doing, you know, you shouldn't put it up there as like a warranted red flag for people to like want to hate you. Like you want people to get into agriculture, not fight against you.
Yeah, I think it's important. Like you can put up the information there. Knowing what's the right information's pretty good. Like with a platform 25,000 or more.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just go too direct and savage for
I try and keep it cute and cuddly, you know, just putting up pictures of baby lambs and little calves and, you know, cattle just sitting out there in the paddock, you know, and I know letting people connect in that sort of way. Probably, you know, like I said, as far as the whole processing like side of things, you know, probably steer away from that a little bit. Unless you're sitting there speaking to people one-on-one, you know, people just don't understand, you know, they don't understand what goes into having to, you know, grow livestock and what it takes to put steaks on your plate and lamb chops on your table.
Did the girls get into that much? Like, were they interested in agriculture more than just like on the show? Did they have a genuine interest?
Like a little bit, you know, I talked to him about it, but more so probably like the guidelines of the show, you know, because there was moments there, like I'd be talking about like beef and sheep and, you know, this is what we're doing here. And then they'd sort of, the producers would pull us back and they're like, Alex, this is about finding love. Okay. It's farmer wants a wife, not, you know, farmer selling his girlfriend a chop, you know. So steered us away from it a fair bit. But I'd say interested, you know, because they didn't really know much about it, but I wouldn't say really captivated so much by it. There was one of the girls, she was really interested in it, probably not so much in livestock, but more, she was an environmental consultant. And so she was more interested in like, you know, I was like talking about trees and like the different like grasses that grew at home and ones that were high in protein and like salines and how like mulga is like you know, like saved us through droughts and how like the like animals like flourish off it and keeps them alive and certain things that are poisonous. And she was really interested in that side of things. And when like start talking about like a bit more of like you know, your ecology, you know, and what certain plants grow at certain times of the year and you know, how animals respond to it. I don't know, like, yeah, that was probably the only thing that I probably found the girls that had a bit of a rapport with it. But as far as sort of the animals and all the processes it goes in, it was a bit hard for them to fathom. And, like, it was, you know, filming only sort of took 5 weeks and, you know, you can't learn a lot on a farm in 5 weeks. Really, you know, you need to be there for a couple of months and a year before you start, it all starts to sink in and make sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think like you'd find some hiccups down the road if they were to stay for a year, they'd keep learning over time, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. No, no, they would. And like I said, I think when you're there and there's nothing else going on and, you know, you know, internet's not great and you haven't really got much of a social life, I think that is what like draws you more into agriculture. You get more invested in your animals and what they're eating and you know, what you can do to benefit them and give them better quality of life. And yeah, so it sucks up a lot of your time, and then I guess you get more interested. Gives you a hobby.
Yeah, of course. So like looking past Farmer Wants a Wife, where are you looking now? Is there a girl in mind, or you're just playing the field to see how it is?
I'm playing the field a bit at the moment. It's like I said, it didn't work out with the girls on the show, but I'm still good friends with them. And it has been good since the show. It's opened up a lot of doors. And it's funny, you get on TV and all of a sudden yeah, everyone's cup of tea, you know, and your face is out there. And I guess like, you know, people know you from a farm and like, if they're interested in that lifestyle and what you do, like they're more captivated in you. And it's like, hey, like I'm in farming and I like sheep and cattle, like let's talk, which is nice. It sort of gives you half a foot in the door. Whereas, you know, come up to a girl you're half interested in, and it's like, oh, so what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm in agriculture. And it's like, oh, I know nothing about it. So you're starting from zero from like day one.
Yeah. It's not as straight as up as working as an accountant or whatnot.
Yeah, that's it, you know, building that relationship.
How's the pub down at Cunnamulla?
Or
just locals?
Just locals, yeah. She's pretty Kalamala was pretty quiet, you know, before the show, and then she got pretty quiet during COVID, and she's pretty quiet now. Yeah, the young girls that live out there are sort of far and in between, I know, and anyone that sort of that sort of got a bit of an education or, you know, sort of got big plans, sort of move away generally, like they move down to Brisbane or down to Sydney or metropolis, anywhere really, just where the opportunity is, you know. I think people go to university and they sort of see, see how the other half live, and they sort of think, well, you know, maybe there's not enough out in Kalamala to keep me out here.
Going to the greener grass on the other side of the fence.
That's it. And it's tough too, you know, like we're now staring down the barrel of 9 years of drought, you know, And it's a long time for a place not to have money. You know, you need money to have people there and to, you know, put infrastructure in and give people jobs. And, you know, if you're staring down the barrel of having like a young family out there in this place that 9 year droughts, there's no money, there's no opportunity. I mean, would you want to raise a family there? Would you want to go somewhere where it is raining all the time and that agriculture is booming and that there's opportunity for you and then your young family as you grow older? Like, you know, that's what people look at. You know, for us, you know, being at Kalamala, we're there because we love it. And, you know, I grew up there, but I don't know if I didn't, would I move there? Probably, dare I say, probably not. You know, looking at like what's been going on in the last 10 years.
Yeah, definitely. I'd see like where we were from around the Wilkenya area, there was a lot of families. They've gone, or like the bigger corporate sort of farm owners are moving in and just have managers running three properties as such. You lose that sense of community.
Exactly. Yeah. Like at home, like there's an area called the Salad Bowl, and it's some of the most beautiful, productive land in Kalamala. It's all, you know, floodplain country and open Mitchell grass. And down there, there used to be 20 families. It's pretty much owned by two people now. Like one place is, I think it's like 280,000, and another place is 400,000. You know, all the prime blocks, and they've just all been just accumulated into one. And yeah, just owned by two people. They just get the contractors in, and then they leave. So, you know, you've lost so many people. You've lost 100 people practically from that area. And now there's 10 living out there. You know, it's tough.
Talking about talking about being like in a community, are you like keep in touch with the other blokes that were on Farmer Wants a Wife?
Yeah, I do actually. I do keep in touch with the other boys from the farms. I don't know, like we touch base with each other. It's been a bit hard, like everyone's sort of been sort of doing a bit of harvest and all that sort of thing, but there is plans to sort of try and catch up next year. Farmer Harry, he's down in Gilgow. I think he's having his 30th. And so hopefully we all get down there for a bit of a shindig and a catch up then, which would be nice. But, you know, no one like in the world's been through the experience we had. So it sort of makes us mates for life, really. And when things did get a bit tough on the show, with, you know, producers and the girls, you know, we all sort of reaching out to each other. It's like, oh, how's things going? Your farm, boys, you know, how are you faring? It's like, oh, it's a bit tough, you know? So, yeah, like it was good. Like, we were definitely dependent on each other. And, like I said, sharing that experience, you'll never forget it. So, they're pretty special people to me. It's probably one of the best things about the show was meeting the other farmers, I'd say.
Yeah, it's cool that like you got a spread of farmers across Australia,
coming
from
and,
all different aspects.
You know, and all, yeah, exactly. You know, you got one guy down Tassie, you got another guy down Griffith, Goulburn, and then Southwest Queensland, and then it, you know, fruit farmer up in Innisfail. So a bit of diversity in the farming as well.
Yeah, it's good to see. I think like the show does do a bit of good for like rural communities, building them up and giving a voice to farmers.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a lot of their plan as well. They supported like various like fundraising groups. Like there's a mob called Rural Aid.
Yep.
And they were sort of like the show sort of sponsored them. And they actually came out to my community. They're a bunch of sort of, you know, volunteers, retirees, and they just came out and did volunteer farm work, be it paint a shed or, you know, help you do a bit of sheep work or clean something up. And it was fantastic. There must have been at least 50, 60-odd people come out to Kalamulla, and they put them up at the showgrounds. And it wasn't just restricted to farms as well. Like they did work all through the community. You know, they fixed up things at the racetrack, the showgrounds. It was fantastic, you know, and they were just happy to be out there and just do something for the community and for, like, I guess for the forgotten voice of Australia, which is out back. You know, people, I know some, we do feel a little bit forgotten, segregated out there.
Yeah, that, so it was nice. A bloody good job, didn't they?
Yeah. So, big shout out to Toyota as well. Toyota, like, sort of like pitched, you know, behind the scenes was sort of pitching like a few, like, little, rural things, like cricket matches, like for the community and get people in for like a sausage sizzle, and, gave money sort of to, help put like a bit of infrastructure in at like local sports, like centers and all that sort of stuff at each of the farms. Yeah, so there's little stuff that the show did behind the scenes that you didn't know about, that sort of trying to put a bit of money back into the community and just having the camera crew there. Like the camera crew stayed at the sort of local cabins. They ate at the pub every night. They got a lot of the food that we feed for the girls, you know, from town, from the pub, from the local like shopping center. You know, that's supporting our community. They're spending money there. So all these little things count and they help.
Yeah, there's a huge hype build up around the show for sure.
Mm.
So for yourself, talking back onto the farm, what sort of like improvements have you made? Like on the podcast, I'm looking to get farmers to look into ag tech to adapt and adopt a bit easier.
Yep.
What like sort of improvements have you done, you think? You and your old man, your family.
Now, are you talking about like sort of like software and computers, or are you talking about as like infrastructure?
Even like infrastructure and like technology, software, whatnot, just to make probably your day-to-day easier.
You know, like technology was sort of probably still lagging a little bit. Auctions Plus, I think, has been a great thing for like agriculture and farms, you know, having to, you know, you take the pictures of the animals and the stock on the farm, and then you put it on there, and you have a buyer, you know, down New South Wales or Queensland, and they're able to see it and buy it, instead of, you know, people sort of having to call around and find someone to buy your stock. You're sort of getting the best price for your animals.
Perfect for drought.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're not knocking things around, having to truck them and send them to a sale yard. It's like you do it off farm, and then they get sent straight to like whoever buys them. So Auctions Plus has been like a big one for us. But what we're doing now, and please hopefully some of the listeners are doing, is doing the dog fencing.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, whether or what you're impacted up there.
We are. We've been heavily impacted over the last couple of years by dogs. And we've had a guy out dogging on our place for the last 2 years, and he's caught, I think he got up to 20, 21 dogs he's caught off our place.
Just our place alone.
And where we were putting, that was another reason why like our sheep numbers hadn't been so good. Like you know, there's a certain paddock where we were putting our sheep out, and 500 ewes and 40 lambs. And you know, see, like, maybe the dogs might have been eating them all, but they're sort of getting in there, they're disturbing the sheep, they're distressing them, they're mismothering. So yeah, that's been a big problem for us. So we've fenced off 15 kilometers along our northern boundary, and we've fenced off another 7 kilometers on our southern boundary, and then we're sort of, I guess you could say, peace talks with the neighbors to do our eastern boundary. Yeah. We have 10 kilometers of materials ready to go, but that's a big thing that's going in everywhere, all in our areas. It just, one, to keep the dogs out, two, to probably try and keep the migration of kangaroos coming through your place, which can absolutely decimate you, and also sort of losing your stock to your neighbours and trying to get them back. You know, with these fences, it just seems to make life a lot easier to manage, and to know that you're putting animals in there, they're not going to get attacked by ferals, and then you can get them back out again.
How big are the fences you're putting in?
Like kilometres or how?
Like tall.
Yeah, six foot. So I think the wires, about 1,500, like the netting.
Yep.
And then usually a bit of barb on top.
Yeah, righto.
So 6 foot. Yeah, they're 6 foot fences. So keeps most things out.
I can't imagine, like, it's not cheap at all running these fence lines to improve, but
nah.
You should be seeing it over the next few years, no?
Yeah, it's just one of those things you just have to do. And, you know, anyone that's put them in have all said, we just wish we'd put them up sooner. But you are looking down the barrel of $8,000 a kilometre to put a fence up. By the time materials, labour, clearing it, grading it, $8,000. Some areas have put in subsidies, like you can get, if you can get into a cluster, there's subsidies, but trying to go your own. And sadly, in Kalamala, we haven't really sort of, they've put in a few clusters and people have been able to get subsidies, but we haven't been able to sort of get individual subsidies. So, you know, you're staring down the barrel of $8,000 kilometer. It's pretty hard to make that money back.
Are you doing all the labor yourself?
No, we've sort of had a contractor come along and do the northern end. I've actually been building these fences now for like the last sort of 6-7 months because we've been so dry at home. It's can't really afford to have me there full time. So I've been out contract fencing with a guy, and we've just been out building fences. And then when Dad's got all the big stuff on at home, I come back and help him do it.
Yeah. Have you nailed the figure eight knot joining fences?
I have actually, but like I said, with all these fences going up, there's all these little bits and pieces and tools that they've got it to make sort of things just a little bit faster, and they've got like little gripples that you put on to join all the wire together, and then you just clamp them on sort of with like you can either do it manually, or it's like a little electric clamp that you sort of use if you're a plumber, sort of clamping up pipes.
Yeah, and it shifts the wire through so you can get a bit closer in.
That's it. But yeah, I have mastered the figure eight. I've done so many now. I hate to think. I've got calluses on the inside of my fingers from it.
Yeah, there's nothing better than mastering the figure eight once you finally nut it out. It took me a while in the beginning.
Yeah, I know. If it gets a bit hot and I haven't had a good drink of water, I still manage to mess it up.
All good. Well, Alex, it's been excellent having you on the show, Farms Advice Podcast. Thanks for coming on, mate. And getting a bit of insight into Farmer Wants Wife and also your operations with the family.
Well, thanks, mate. And thanks for having us on. And it's been great talking to you. And it's good to put the word out about agriculture and what, you know, sort of what we're going through at the moment.
Absolutely. Building platforms. But if there's any single ladies out there, Alex is single.
Yeah. So they tell me.
For the podcast, just something I ask everyone, who would you like to hear on here and why?
Like someone from agriculture or?
Yeah, preferably.
I'd love to hear Anthony Davies on here. He's a self-made man from the Territory. He's a cattle man. He'd be pretty interesting hearing his story. That or maybe Tiggy Forrest.
Jeez, that's a big one.
You know, that is a big one, you know, big hitter. But I know, like, you know, obviously he's got his mining, but he's obviously bought a lot of cattle stations. And, you know, what's driven him to do that? You know, what is his connection with, like, agriculture? I don't know. It'd be pretty cool sort of hear that side of things. But I don't know, it's nice to hear from the little guy as well, you know, what little things people are doing to sort of, you know, when agriculture is not sort of agriculture is sort of your bread and butter, and, you know, what are they doing to make the bit of jam? But yeah, I guess those two guys would be pretty cool to hear on the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. I'll just ring Tree straight up on the phone.
Yeah, just send him a message, you know, just put a memo in.
I'll get him on Instagram.
Maybe Gina Reinhart. I mean, Gina, what, bought Kidman and Co. I know. Some heavy hitters. I'm asking for some serious heavy hitters, aren't I? Anthony Davis would be an interesting one. I don't know if you keep up with Aaron Williams magazine.
Yep.
He was the front cover of, like, Aaron Williams magazine there for a bit. And, yeah, he just owns a heap of country west of like the Northern Territory. And yeah, he'd be a cool one to tap into. You know, he's been a ringer and he's lived out in grass huts. And I know he's a multi-millionaire, but he just gets around in baggy jeans and thongs. I think he's down to earth, and he's a good advocate for agriculture.
Yeah, definitely. I'll have to get in touch. And also the big hitters as well. If they want to reach out, feel free.
Well, you know, get a bit of heat behind it, you know, and like I said, the good thing about Gina and Tiggy, you know, they're Australian. They're Australian-owned companies, and it probably is something they want to get behind, you know, like supporting Australia and being, like, sort of self-sufficient and keeping it in-house, you know. Good luck for that. I know who do people usually ask to go on the show? I don't know.
Throughout their own industry sort of thing. They're good though. I'll definitely take them on.
Yep.
For Tiggy or Gina, I think though.
when the podcast gets a bit bigger.
Yeah, they might be sponsor the show. Let's see.
Yeah. Be cool. I don't know, here for that, or like just probably some of the people that are running, like, AACo, you know, like what their ideas are and like what their future is for, like, you know, the cattle industry. And maybe I know some of the guys off, like, the studs down in like Southern New South Wales, like Bunnock, Pudgynook, where they see wool going, what they've implemented in to, you know, give wool a future, you know, how they've gone with, like, sort of, like, the prices crashing down and then coming back, all these sort of things. I know, I definitely reckon, like, get onto, like, some of those ram stud guys down in Southern New South Wales. I'd really like to listen to them and their story.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot there that we could learn from, like, individual sort of livestock studs like that. It'd be good.
Mm.
How can we reach out to you? Is it Farmer AU, Alex?
Yeah, Farmer Alex AU is my handle on Instagram. And, I always, like, sort of go through my messages and try and, like, if anyone's got questions or want to talk to me, I try giving my time of day. So... yeah, if anyone's got any questions about agriculture, feel free to send me a message.
Thanks for listening to this podcast as we start to round out the year that was 2020. It's great to see Alex working within the family and how they're working as Alex looks to run the farm on his own later on. If you haven't had the conversation with your children or parents about what's happening later on, about transitioning into running the farm or passing on the buck to your children, right now is the perfect time and a great opportunity to get everyone together during the Christmas period. For this podcast, catch the show notes at farmsadvice.com.au and continue the conversation in the Farms Advice Facebook group. We've got room for a couple more before we wrap up for 2020, so stay tuned as we get into holiday mode for some of us. Until then,